Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Gossman here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. It is Friday night. This is Friday night, October 7th. Dustin across from me, enjoying a beer. It's homecoming Cheers. Weekend. I mean, it's not really Dustin's homecoming weekend, but whatever, that's fine.
Yeah. I didn't go here. It just feels like I did.
Yeah, it actually, it does. It feels a little bit more like you went here than I went here sometimes. But we're talking tonight where this is the, I guess, the Hoosier Hysteria postcast. And we kind of promised all week that we would do a podcast really diving more into basketball than football. And so we're going to do that here because I think there's a decent chance that by the time you hear this, the IU Michigan game will at minimum have started, much less been played. But I mean, Hoosier Hysteria tonight was, I think it's fair to say, more of a spectacle than maybe it's ever been. There was the concert.
It's up there, yeah.
But even more than that, there was, you know, the introductions were, seemed to be all about kind of getting a crowd around all the players, and there was more interactivity. It was a little bit, it was lighter on the basketball activity and heavier on the crowd interactivity. I don't know. I mean, I've said forever, these events are just, they're a recruiting tool, they're a pep rally, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But tonight did feel like Indiana kind of went up a level. And I'm not trying to make it like, oh, it was the best Midnight Madness anyone's ever done anywhere. It's not like this is the first time a concert's happened at one of these things or anything like that. But it feels like at Indiana, this went up a level. There was more thinking outside the box. There was more, you know, let's aim big. And if we have to miss big, we'll miss big. But let's start by aiming big. And, you know, that's what it looked like.
Right. No, they went for spectacle, and it definitely seemed like I go back to this. I mentioned this kind of a few times this week on various radio things, but like, I don't know that another coach could have done it this way. And by that, I mean, I don't know that a non-alum could have pulled off a concert, number one. Number two, kind of given this little of kind of insight. I mean, there was a little there. I mean, obviously they shot, and you got to see Tamar Bates take threes, Miller Kopp take threes, you know, Xavier Johnson take threes. You know, there was not nothing going on, and there was a little bit of a scrimmage. But like when Woodson took the mic and said, "I'm going to give you guys 6 minutes," that's all I got for you.
And it was like the least invested scrimmage.
Yeah,
you know, that I think I've ever seen at one of these. And that, like,
yeah, there was,
they had
no,
a pro day earlier today, right. As we say every year. If you're going to have the coaches in the building for Hoosier Hysteria and the players are going to be doing stuff on the floor, you have to count it as a practice day. So they're always going to work away from Hoosier Hysteria before
yes.
they actually do Hoosier Hysteria. So, like, they're already tired.
Yeah.
But, like, even given all that, they still – this was as you know, sort of low investment of a scrimmage
right.
as I've ever seen.
It wasn't – I mean, it like, the Hoosier Hysteric scrimmage a couple – what I guess it's a month ago now. A little bit more than a month ago, I guess it was late August. That was very all-star gamey, and for good reason. I mean, obviously it was not a you know, Mike Woodson IU run event, so obviously they could only push that so far, and you know they certainly weren't running any plays or anything. It was very all-star game-ish, you know, like Derby Classic type stuff, where it was just, you know, run up and down the floor. No one's running any plays. Basically, like, off the ball defense is pretty minimal. And this was probably even less invested than that. But I mean, they weren't, you know, they weren't totally checked out. There was, you know, a few fun things, a couple guys dunking the ball, a couple guys making shots, you know, nothing that really told you a whole heck of a lot, really at all. But, you know, I mean, were there a couple things that I would say learned isn't necessarily the word. Maybe there were a couple thoughts I had that were reinforced. But, you know, I don't know that you would look at anything and say, okay, well, that tells you that much. But yeah, I mean, they were obviously not trying to give a whole lot away, not trying to wear the guys out. And Woodson pointed out, I was like, I got him back here at 8:30 in the morning. So this is all you guys are going to get. You know, we're going to let him run a little bit. We're going to let them show you some basketball because we feel obligated to do that. But that's about the extent of it.
And I mean, they had, you know, they wanted to go to the concert. They did go to the concert. They participated in the
concert.
They
were loving it.
I mean,
like, they were all in.
Yeah.
When they, it was like literally like probably more than half of each team. I saw Race Thompson walk off and be like, I'm good. But like, I mean, I saw Geronimo, Hutchefino, Johnson getting after it. They were all in a circle, and like the women's team too. And like, you know, I mean, I got an angle from behind them, but I mean, like just the way that you were seeing kind of the hand gestures when it looked like most of them knew at least most of the words.
It's, if anyone's curious, San Diego's beating the Mets 7-1
as we record this,
and the NL East is over. this is an impossible statement to quantify. But we have between us attended like 30 of these, which is, you know, when you say it out loud,
I've skipped more of them. Makes than you me would a little think. Sad. I managed to duck several for football.
You would go to football games, and I would always hang back. I don't know. There is, and some of this I think is contributed by the women's team as well and the success that they've had recently.
Yeah.
But there is just sort of a confidence in this program.
That was the word I was going to use.
That like it, I mean, you know, like even like with the scrimmage, it wasn't like they were thumbing their nose at the fans, but it was more just like, yeah, but we don't need a scrimmage. Like we know we're good. You'll see we're good. We got other stuff to worry about. Like,
right.
There was just, I don't know. I think the word that I kept coming up with was swagger, and it wasn't, it didn't feel forced. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, again, to your point, like Mike Woodson is never, he's still got a lot of coaching life left.
Right.
But he's not going to be the guy that, you know, struts out onto the floor and is, you know, dressed all flashy or doing anything like that.
Right.
But he, you know, even he just had a certain confidence. And again, it felt a little bit like swagger.
Well, I mean, it starts with him.
This event is always going to have some of that, but it was more discernible here.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say, okay, among teams that you and I have covered, keeping in mind, I didn't cover the 2016 Big Ten team. You know, I obviously watched that one just from a distance, just by general interest, but I was in Tennessee at the time. This is probably the second most, I mean, and I kind of look at 11 and 12 and 12, 13 as the same guys, you know, because it's always almost entirely the same team. So it's the same group. So this is the second most talented team, you know, second most sort of expectations we've seen, you know, compared to that. And, you know, I do think there's a significant drop off there. Like when we got to Hoosier Hysteria for 2013, it was these guys
supposed to win the national title. That was the number one team in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, and, like that. They were kind of undisputed in that way.
Right. And the difference was like that team and we have like sort of psychoanalyzed the heck out of that team for so long because it was, I think, such a sort of formative period for both of us as beat writers. But they had swagger, but there was also this sense that this has to happen now. You know, that like the clock is running and this team has to win today. This group doesn't have that level of expectation. It's got high expectation, but it's not this national championship or bust thing. It doesn't, like, there's not a fever on top of it, you know, like, and so there is this level of confidence that it's like they don't have to win the whole thing to be successful, but they have this sense that they're really good. And so like there's confidence without
desperation. In a way that they don't need to say it. Like, I'm not trying to make them out to be like Ricky Henderson,
they're not.
I'm not trying to make them out like to be the peak Kobe, Shaq, Lakers, but I just,
no,
there is, you know, even with that scrimmage, there was a real sense of like, you'll see it when you see it.
Right.
Like,
you'll get to it. Yeah.
You know, it's, don't worry, it's coming. That's not for tonight. Tonight was for the fireworks and the songs and, you know, the throwing the t-shirts into the crowd and the concert.
Right.
And you'll enjoy all that, but like, you'll see it with us when you see it. And like, you know, on the one hand, listen, there aren't a lot of guys on this team that have won. I mean, we talked so much last year about how there was literally nobody on the roster that had ever been to the NCAA tournament.
There was zero, literally zero people.
There's nobody on this roster that's been to the NCAA tournament outside of holdovers from last year, because the only new faces this year are freshmen.
And they've never played in a first-round game that they didn't lose by 30.
But on the other hand, like Jalen Hutchefino looks
really
for
good
for all the world like he's really good, like maybe even a little bit underranked. You know, maybe maybe he should have been a top 20 guy instead of a top 30 guy, that kind of thing. They clearly believe in Malik Renaud. Even in those 6 minutes, I mean, one thing that stood out to me, and I wasn't trying very hard to, or I was trying, I was trying hard not to draw
too many conclusions. Yeah. But
even in that 6 minute scrimmage, I looked at it and I was like, man, this second unit just looks different than it did a year ago. Like
Tamar Bates looks confident as hell.
Malik, I guess it's Malik Renaud. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's how we're pronouncing it.
I think so.
That's how it was pronounced all night. But yeah, I mean,
you've got, I trust you've got Jeremy Gray
Bates,
pronunciation.
You've got an almost certainly better Jordan Geronimo, an almost certainly better Tamar Bates. Trey Galloway, we know what he is if he can stay healthy. Now you've probably got a better post player than the second line had a year ago. And yes, there are still concerns. Can this team hit threes? And, you know, just generally, what's the offensive flow going to be? But even just, I mean, just in that limited sample size, you were looking at it and you were like, yeah, but like that's a better five than their second five a year ago.
Right. And I mean, and it's some of the same guys.
Yeah.
But they're better guys. And they're the guys themselves.
That are switched out. The guys that are new look better.
Right.
And again, it's sort of this understated confidence of like, we know we're good. Like and you're gonna find out we're good. And there's just I don't know, there's a point when Mike Woodson pulled Xavier Johnson out and Xavier Johnson went over and shook his hand.
Yeah, it was very kind of.
There was a lot of.
There was a joke to it, and it was funny.
Yeah, there's just a everyone's comfortable, everyone's confident. There's a playfulness. There's a sense of like our coach is smart.
Yeah.
We're good. I'm good. He's good. I trust everybody.
Right.
And it's only year two, so maybe that stuff can be can evaporate a little faster. But on the other hand, it's not like. Mike Woodson would hardly be the first coach to win a Big Ten title, for example, in his second year.
Right.
And, he said it to us at Media Day, but it's different when you're saying it to 12,000 people at Hoosier Hysteria.
Right.
When Courtney Cronin, good friend of the podcast, old Indeed. Friend of the podcast.
Yep.
When Courtney.
We knew her before she was famous.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. When Courtney said, you did all this last year, what's next? And Mike Woodson said a Big Ten title and a national title. He wasn't saying like, oh, we national title or bust for this team, but he was saying like, this is what these guys know I expect.
Yeah.
And exactly. So that's what we're going to do. Like that's where we are,
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where that confidence comes from. And I think Woodson's had it for a long time in his own way or by himself, but it's getting it into his roster that I think is what's maybe a little bit different this year compared to a year ago.
Yeah, compared to a year ago. And I think I want to go back to this, the thing that Woodson has that really helps is even though he doesn't have to prove himself as an Indiana guy. Like that's kind of we've been watching this for so long, just everything that the coaches sort of, post night have had to do, to feel like they were really being embraced. And obviously Tom Crean, I think, took that more personally than any of the rest of them.
And also to be fair to Tom, I think it was more necessary at the time.
It was very necessary.
At the time. Still less than 10 years from Knight's firing. Post Kelvin. And everything that came with that. I think it's kind of this nice blend of it's Mike Woodson.
Yeah.
And also we're
20 years out.
Removed enough from it now that it's not something that college age kids now even remember. Right. Most of them weren't even alive for it.
Right. Yeah. No. Almost none of them. God, good God.
Yeah.
That was my first week of freshman year at Penn State. I remember that.
In a side conversation earlier tonight, if he's listening, I'm confident I'm quoting him correctly, and I'd be shocked if he's listening. Rice Thompson told me he's heard of Outkast, but he's never listened to Outkast.
Jeez.
And I melted into a puddle of water on the
floor. Wow, I just did too. The kids need to know. So sorry.
I feel like Schmidt and New Girls just yelling, youths.
I feel like I got to take another look. We could go rattle on for 5 minutes for why. If they think G Herbo is that great, if they didn't understand Outkast, my God.
Been Big Boy on the stage, I would have been right there. I would have been on the stage.
Yeah, same. And I'm not even the biggest Outkast fan, but my God.
Yeah.
If you guys don't get
a notification that says Zach Osterman started an Instagram live video, five different times. But yeah, I mean, I think you're fair about Woodson. I think it's this combination of it's somebody who doesn't. I mean, I said this when he was hired. I said he says in Indianapolis in a way that is familiar to people from Indianapolis.
Right.
In the same way that there's things I can say to someone from Georgia that they will understand that, right. that most people won't.
Right. You know, Yinzer stuff I can like say. Yes, I know what you mean.
My father-in-law grew up on the Northwest side. He went to Northwest High School. Mm. He was, I think, a year younger than Mike Woodson. Mike Woodson says Indianapolis the same way my father says Indianapolis. And so there's right. that element of like, or my father-in-law, not my father, who was born and raised in Georgia.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that element of he's one of us, quote, right. not you or me, but, you know, yeah. IU fans, people from the state of Indiana, people who are basketball fans in the state of Indiana, they think he's right. one of us. And then there's also kind of this, you are removed mm-hmm. enough from all of that turmoil, even the turmoil of Samson. I mean, you know,
right,
that was,
exactly.
That was three coaches ago. Mm-hmm. You're removed enough even from that there's no aftershock left.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. You're past it. There is this, it's even just a small thing coming after the reunion, you know, when they brought Bobby Knight back on, you know, just sort of all past that, there's just, he's the first coach that doesn't have to do any of that. Like, does not have to do anything in terms of repairing, like, he naturally repairs ties just by existing and walking the door. And so, like, all of the other feeling like, oh, like, you've got to get this, you know, these people to love you, you've got to get them to see you as one of them. He does not have to do any of that work. And that makes everything more confident. And again, like I said it before, like, so stuff like tonight, he can pull off. Like, Mike Woodson can say, we're having a rapper here. And like, I'm sure that there are people that are annoyed, whatever, but more or less, nobody blinks an eye. You know, yeah. like, where it was like, if Tom Crane tried to do that, no. Like, it would have been, it would not have worked. He would have tried it. The fan base would have been angry about it. They'd be like, you're trying too hard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just, it would not have played with Mike Woodson. It plays.
I mean, I think everything tonight, like the pyro,
yeah.
you know, the students on the floor surrounding the players as they came on.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff would probably not have
fly with anybody
of
but
a
Mike.
Concert, you yeah. know, mm-hmm. other than like John Mellencamp, who, you know, that'd be fun too. I'm guessing, no offense to John Mellencamp, who I also hope is not listening to this podcast. I'm guessing the IU basketball teams probably would not be, you know,
quite as excited.
It wouldn't be yeah. quite as culturally relevant.
Yeah. They're not all that into what Blood on the Scarecrow or whatever it is.
Rain on the Scarecrow.
Jesus.
Wept. Man. It's
blood is on the plow. Rain is on the scarecrow. So, that's right. Yeah. Okay. My bad. Oh, I apologize. I am not of you.
Of me? I grew up in Atlanta.
I don't mean you. I mean the people who are listening. I'm
but
sorry.
To be fair,
Ostermans
did settle in the same town as the Mellencamps. My family was from Seymour many, many years ago. But on the same night Terry Moore walks out to Paper and Fire, blood on the scarecrow. We should just shut this thing down.
I'm sorry, everyone. That sounds awesome.
Just to be clear, he's had like a quarter of one beer. Not, like yeah, we're just doing a laid back podcast.
Less
he just
than
doesn't
that.
Know anything. Dustin has no swagger.
None,
unlike Mike
zero,
Woodson.
Zero swagger.
I don't know what else stood out. I mean, I you know, I also just think the day, the holistic day, was interesting.
Right.
They had a pro day. They seemed to suggest in some social media postings that that every Big Ten team, they just let all the other Big Ten teams come in and watch them work out.
Right.
Every NBA team was represented in some shape or form. Mm. You know, I mean, we got to talk to Miller Kopp about that, and you know, he said all the things you'd expect a player to say about how, you know, the opportunities that provides and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Miller Kopp had a nice night anyway.
Yeah, I think he did. I think that's fair. So did Chloe Moore McNeil.
Yes, the two of them together were
which
pretty
is
tough
an interesting development for the women's program, because I mean, yes. you know, you brought Sarah Scalia in because you know she can hit threes. You've already got Grace Berger, who's obviously a very good jump shooter.
Yep.
You know, there's some stuff you're going to have to remake about that roster without Allie Patberg, without Nicole Cardano Hillary, without, you know, Alexa Gulbe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. if you can add more 3-point shooting dynamic, there's no basketball team since the 3-point shot was introduced in college in 1986 that's gotten worse for being able to hit more threes.
Right.
But no, I think just going back to like the day the men had it, it just sort of felt very. I mean, holistic isn't quite the right word. There was just something about kind of the whole day.
It was complete. It was very complete.
And it
day
being homecoming weekend, and there were alumni in town. It felt like the sort of thing that Indiana has when Indiana's good. And this team may be good. You know, we think it's good, but we'll see. I've seen Indiana teams where I thought they were good and they turned out not to be. But, you know, it feels like the sort of like weekend that Duke has or Kentucky has. Where there's just this feel of like we're celebrating, we're boasting, we're chests out.
It's
Indiana basketball all weekend, and then football on Saturday with the homecoming game, and so. You know, everybody can kind of bask in the collegial whatever of that, and there's recruits in town. It just sort of felt like Indiana, at least in terms of what this event could be in real time, Indiana nailed the whole idea of pro day Friday afternoon, Hoosier Hysteria Friday night, into homecoming weekend as best it could.
Yeah. I got a kick out of the fact that they brought the Big Noon Kickoff guys out. And by that, I mean Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, and Brady Quinn.
Yeah, these kids need to know about Reggie Bush, man.
Yeah.
Know about Reggie Bush.
No, they don't. My God.
No. God. I ran into some friends who had their kids there, and, like, you know, one of their youngest is probably, like, I don't know, like 9 or 10. And I was like, you don't know about Reggie
Bush. You don't know about how
you need to understand about Reggie
Bush. Reggie was absurd. You got to see, like, the Fresno State game. There was, like, the one change of direction there that was just, like, who are you? What is this? How is this even possible? But no, like, they were into it. And again, they've got, between the three of them, absolutely zero connection to Indiana. At least, I mean, Brady Quinn at least played college football in the state and the other side of it. And Brady Quinn literally stopped to be like, oh, where's the recruits at? He was like, recruits, do you see this stuff? And it was like,
yeah, no, there had to be something in IU compliance. It was like, no.
Whoa,
no.
What are you doing?
Talk to recruits.
I mean, can they not? I don't know.
I'm sure they can. And also, like, IU compliance is notoriously sticky about the rules, but.
Right. But, like, the fact that that was a thing...
If you're listening from IU Compliance, they may be listening.
They might actually be listening, you know, yes. We are told you are good at your jobs.
We just want to film a few football recruits at your camps. It's fine. Oklahoma it's not does a big it. Deal. Alabama does it. It's fine. Anyway, keep going.
Right. But, like, that was notable to me because it was just like, this guy, Brady Quinn, I mean, I have no idea if he rooted for IU when he was a kid. I have no idea whatsoever. But, like, I mean, he was selling it. It was like, you played at Notre Dame. Like, you're just saying, wow, this is cool. Check this out, recruits. And I have no idea if he has any rooting interest in IU whatsoever. And he was like selling it.
Yeah, he's from
Reggie
Columbus.
Bush was in there.
He's from Columbus, Ohio. He went to Dublin, Kaufman.
None of that makes any sense.
Yeah. Who knows?
Like, he probably rooted for Ohio State.
Oh, there's Jacob DeGrom looking sad. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, Zach's really upset about it. But point of the matter, I mean, like, that was something. Just, that was something worth noting. Like, they let him out there, and they just sort of...
There's all these little elements that contribute to, like, the larger pageantry.
Exactly.
And some of that stuff couldn't have been planned. You didn't know Reggie Bush was going to drain back-to-back threes.
No, exactly.
Right when somebody said, hey, Reggie, go take a three, and he was just going to knock him down back-to-back.
Yeah, Rhett Lewis was like, you think you could hit this shot? Like, Reggie's like, I'm Reggie Bush. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want,
pretty
much.
I can turn around a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Watch. But you didn't know what Brady Quinn was going to do or whatever, but like,
yeah, they just let him out there and they were like, this is really cool. Hey, recruits, this is really cool.
Everything just felt very loose. It felt very sort of like,
good for Josh Bell. I just want to say that out loud.
Yeah. You know, and what's funny is he hit it against the Mets.
There's that. Yeah.
And what's funny about that is the Mets. I'm still, yeah.
Anyway, so, moving on.
If Ralph Russo's listening to this, I keep saying that. If someone's listening to this, Ralph, I'm sorry. Again, I hope Ralph's not listening to our Friday night Hoosier Hysteria recap podcast.
I'm certain he's not.
I don't know. I thought it, I mean, Hoosier Hysteria from a reporter's perspective is always just sort of a novelty. Mm-hmm. Like you're not going to get a lot out of it, but it is the first chance to look at the basketball team.
Right.
It's not like anything. It's obviously very low pressure or very low stakes or whatever you want to say.
Right.
But I just can't remember a Hoosier Hysteria that, I'm not trying to act like it was a Broadway show and they pulled it off at Hamilton-esque levels. It was more just like, I can't remember a Hoosier Hysteria that just kind of aimed to be quite so electric and quite so relevant.
Yeah.
And landed it the way, without the electricity of, You know, I remember Eric Gordon's Hoosier Hysteria in 07 when the building was basically full, and that was because here was the number one player in the country, and he was from Indianapolis, and he, you know, he binned off Illinois to come to Indiana.
Yeah.
Or 2013. No, well, it would have been fall 2012 when we were looking at the number one team in the country, and everyone was so excited, and there was just there was so much, you know, sort of excitement in general. Emma Stone is watching the Mets lose. That's wonderful. You know, just like Indiana, like I said, Indiana wanted this event to be relevant.
Yeah.
And it was.
Right.
And not in a way that felt like they had to spend $3 million on it to do. I guess I don't know what they paid G. Herbo for his 30-minute performance. Probably not $1 million.
Right.
But, you know, not in some way where they had to pull out every stop, call in every favor. It just felt, a lot of it felt well-planned.
Right.
And the stuff that didn't feel planned felt very organically positive.
Yeah.
And it just, again, all of it seemed to reflect the mood of a program.
Yeah. No, just like everything. Yeah. There was like, there was some swagger, but more it was just confidence. There was just confidence. You know, I don't know. Like, again, like a couple little like other interesting wrinkles. Like, I thought it was interesting that Trace Jackson Davis picked Mr. Brightside as his upcoming song. I don't know why that's a little thing to me, because it's just like, it's not like
that. That is, Mr. Brightside is to college kids today what Living on a Prayer and Journey were to,
fair,
like, to me when I was
like, right,
you know,
which is amazing because it says we're old. It was, but it's the, also it was funny that he picked
the thing
that
you just like, everyone knows the words and you belt it as loud as you can.
Yeah. And like, I got a kick out of the fact that Trace picked that, like, and he sort of like bathed in it too. I got a kick out of that, like, because it was just, but it, like, that was confident. You know, like, that was him saying, I'm going to remember this song from college. Like, this is probably not a song you think I listened to. It probably, it came out when I was, I don't know, 5, 4,
yeah,
whatever. But, like,
yeah, I was in high school.
This is, I'm going to remember IU for this. This is a song that we've been out, and I've sung this song, and, like, this is what I'm going to think of. And I've just, you know, like, and he sort of, like, came out, and they were also sort of bouncing around by the bench, and it was like, it was, I don't know, that exuded confidence to me in its own little way. He didn't pick a song to be hard ass, you know, like he picked a song to have fun with and sort of embrace being in college with. Just little stuff like that. Like, again, some level is nothing, but just sort of showed me that this it is a group that seems to be comfortable in its own skin right now.
We should talk about the women for a second, because
we should,
because
they're,
I mean,
really good.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're really good, and I mean, they exuded a lot of that same confidence, and obviously, it's you know, it's even more justified, frankly, than the men's is in terms of what they've done. Obviously, again, as I said a minute ago, that there's some stuff to replace, there's some production to replace. You do have a top two that's probably as good as anybody in the league, even at Iowa with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah,
you know, and every single one of the transfers you picked up, the big ones you picked up on paper, just feels like a, you know, like there was a Sarah Scalia-sized hole in the roster, and they went and got Sarah Scalia.
Right.
You know, and there was a Sidney Parrish-sized hole in the roster, like a cartoon running through a wall.
Right.
And they went out and got Sidney Parrish. And I mean, I asked Terry Morton about this at Media Day, and I, you know, her answer was somewhat interesting and somewhat cliche and whatever else, but she's gotten really good at, you know, she was good at blending high school players and transfers before the portal.
Right.
And I just think it's, I mean, if you think back to, you know, she obviously inherited a team that had the two players that she sort of built her initial sort of run around, Tyra Buss and Amanda Cahill.
Mm-hmm.
There were some impact transfers picked up through that stretch. And then, you know, when you started talking about like Brenna Wise and Allie Patberg and, you know, then Nicole Cardano-Hillary, and now you've got another team where you have this, what appears on paper anyway, this really good blend of, you know, players that have been there and done that at Indiana.
Right.
You know, like Grace Berger, like Mackenzie Holmes, like Chloe Moore McNeil, that you know, can talk about like, well, this is the way we do it here, and this is why we win at this level.
Right.
And then you're sticking in, you know, a player that has tons of Big Ten experience hitting threes. You know, I mean, I think Terry Moore in reference, like Sarah Scalia hit like 7 threes in 1 half against Indiana from Minnesota last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you go get another former Miss Basketball in the state to come home.
Sidney Parrish,
you know, and all these different kinds of things. It just feels like Terry Morin has kind of figured out that calculus between, you know, and she did it in the pre-portal era. Now it's even in some ways easier to do it if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it seems like she's striking a good balance.
Yeah. No, she absolutely is. It, like you said, it's almost like she's worked on it and she's had time of that before everybody was doing it. It is the point where you can sort of take it on the road when it comes to, you know, like recruiting the portal and say, we win here. You can come, like, you know, Sydney Parrish, you can come back home because we win here now.
And we win with you. Like, we win, you know, we don't just win, like, it's not just, oh, we win and we'll find a place for you. It's we win in part because, when we get a transfer, we adapt them in.
Right.
And they succeed.
Yeah.
And here's a proven track record of that.
Right.
And here's three numbers of you know, girls you can call, women you can call and say, like, but do they really? And they'll say, yes, they do, because they did with me. And that was only 4 years ago or whatever.
Right.
Exactly. And it's obviously, you know, again, it sort of feels, it's interesting because it sort of feels like the, you know, it's almost like Indiana was on that, you know, sort of was on that equation or whatever you want to say, that formula before almost everybody else, because it was right in the pre-portal era.
Mm.
But it's also interesting because that's kind of how you do it now.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, you don't, I mean, the days of we're going to go get, it's not like you'll never, you know, the men's side's a good example. They didn't take any transfers this year. They weren't even super serious with any. There were one or two that they were clearly like, hey, you know, depending on what happens with our roster, we're interested in you.
Right. Yeah.
But there was never like a, please pick us, like, please choose us kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like every offseason's got to be a couple high schoolers and a couple transfers.
Right. But a lot of them are.
This is the formula now. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you find the players that fit out of high school. Grace Berger has been a Hoosier for, you know, her whole career now. Mackenzie Holmes, same thing. You know, you develop them, you make them better, et cetera. And you keep that part of it going. Chloe Moore McNeil is kind of sort of next in line in that regard of somebody that came up through the program. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side, when you can plug some holes, you plug some holes.
Yeah, you know,
and,
exactly.
And, but not just like, oh, let's just go find whatever.
Right.
You know, let's just go into the portal looking for shooting. Everyone goes into the portal looking for shooting.
Right.
It's being targeted in a way where it feels like consistently, once you get involved with a player, the fit is so obvious.
Right.
That it just happens very naturally.
Right.
And then not like every transfer will work out, but then that player comes in and fits and is part of your dynamic, and you just makes you better. And it's fascinating to me that I'm not saying Terry Morin is like a visionary. Oh, she knew the portal was coming. She probably had some idea, to be fair.
Right. Yeah.
You know, kind of sense of but it's more just this idea of, you know, she was kind of working on this, whether she intended to or not, before it became the thing that
to do. Yeah. You know, the thing that you had to do,
the done way of doing things. Or that's not, what is the, I don't know what I'm saying.
The Terry Morin way of doing things.
No. I can't remember what the word is.
Okay.
Press on. It's not the done way of doing things. I recognize that that's not what you say.
Okay.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Pick me up here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it. What it comes down to basically is Terry Morin knows how to roster build. That's really where we're going at. Like, she knew how to roster build before the portal. She knows how to roster build after the portal. She was preparing for this situation before. She was like, at least, you know, there was enough transferring going on before the portal that you still had to be prepared to do it. Not that it was, you know, it wasn't nearly as dominant as it is now, that you don't, you know, generally don't have to sit out a season. Even then you did from time to time.
That's true. I mean, like, you know, I don't think Allie Patberg did, but Brenna Wise did. I'm almost certain.
Yeah.
So
that sounds right to me. So, you know, it's not forever in the past, that you still had to prepare yourself to say, hey, I'm going to have an opening in a year that I'm going to need filled, and this is a person who I think could fill it. You had to be advanced in that because you had to look at somebody and say, okay, you know, are you going to matter in a year? But, you know, like now it's more like free agency, similar to that, you know, to what you have in professional sports. But it's still, you still have to be smart about it. And you still have to know, okay, like how do you make it so that this works on a chemistry level? How do you know how to fit somebody in? How to you know, create a chemistry that absorbs that person? And she's very, very good at that.
And I think it's, you know, I think that's a really good point about also we talked. So, I mean, I was the one that said such and such size hole in the roster and all that.
Right.
But there's also the chemistry of a locker room that accepts those players.
Yeah.
You know, and understands like how to take somebody who, you know, hasn't been around for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, when you have a freshman, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, well, they're a freshman. They'll just take time. It's just the natural element of whatever. But when you have a transfer, there will always be that sense of, well, she's already got 2 years or 3 years of experience. You know,
right.
I don't know. You're not going to put like a number on it, but you're going to look at a transfer like Sarah Scalia and you're going to say, well, you're going to help us right away.
Right.
Because, you know, we saw you do it at Minnesota for X number of years or whatever.
Right.
And it's sort of this idea, I think, of how do you create a culture where everybody just embraces that and you know, the players who have been around for, you know, several years, there's no animosity, but there's also no strangeness. There's just sort of like a, hey, door's open, you're here now.
Right.
Because you talk to anybody who goes through it, transfer recruiting does not happen in nearly such an extended way as high school recruiting.
Right.
You know, you have less time to get to know coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go on a visit, you can meet players, and maybe you knew some of them already.
Right.
But you don't have that time to maybe come down for some unofficial visits and play in open gyms and all it, you know, it all has to be condensed.
Right.
So how do you create that environment where, you know, you're really good at identifying the players that will fit you, and then your roster is really good at absorbing those players when they commit and when they sign. And I think Terry Morin just deserves a ton of credit for that. And I'm not saying this is the only reason Terry Morin is winning. Listen, again, Grace Berger, homegrown.
McKenzie Holmes.
I guess that's a term we have to use now. It's a very soccer term, is when you talk about players that were grown.
Well, it's a baseball term too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's true.
I mean, like, and to some extent, it's all pro sports.
You know,
like,
even
really
like
baseball.
I mean, even Tyra Buss, Amanda Cahill, obviously players that I think both of them, if I'm not mistaken, Terry inherited, but they spent basically their entire careers with her. You know,
most
certainly,
of them,
certainly the majority of it, the bulk of it. You know, so. I'm not saying she can only win with transfers, but she's had so much success, and I'm kind of going on about this, but I do find it fascinating, like, why it has worked so well for her when there's so much talk in all college sports about the portal and how do you deal with the portal and what's the right balance and all this. And it's like Terry Morin was getting the balance right before the portal existed, not just in terms of when to go after a certain player, how to get a certain player in a certain situation or whatever. But what you do when you know, just how you do it consistently.
Right.
And how you build a culture in the clubhouse that constantly accepts those players.
Yeah. No, it takes a lot of work. It takes players that trust you, you know, like it takes building trust within the people that you already have, that you're going to get people that are going to fit. You know, at the end of the day, that basically that like when you go after somebody, it's because you need that person, you know, and that's what you need for the team, basically, at that. And everybody's just got to buy into this person is here now, and we're going to, you know, create the best scenario for them.
Let's leave it there for now. We've talked about 40 minutes about Hoosier Hysteria. Is there anything else you took away from?
No, I think we hit on it. I mean, I got down to the point where I was talking about like music selection. So I feel like,
yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I feel like I've mined everything.
I think the one other thing I would say about the women's program too, you know, we talked about the confidence on the men's side. There is, I think, an earned swagger on the women's
side.
There
really is.
Again, not like people are strutting, but more the sense of just like we know how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me because for so long, Indiana women's basketball was this this strange curiosity in women's college basketball. Purdue was so good. Notre Dame was so good.
Right.
The Big Ten was consistently good.
Right.
There was so much talent in the state of Indiana. And yet IU basketball just could not find a way to put it together.
Right.
And like, you know, again and again, they would seem to be kind of pushing up against it, and then they wouldn't be able to break through. Terry Moran has.
Right.
And we're not just in a place where Terry, you know, we're going to say, oh, Terry Moran has, you know, such and such number of NCAA appearances. You know, she has X percentage of all the NCAA appearances, whatever. It feels like there is just kind of this idea of Indiana women's basketball is roughly, I'm not saying they're going to win a national title. I'll never predict that about any program ever.
Sure.
But, you know, roughly speaking, like they're what Purdue was for so long.
Yeah.
You know, that they have found their formula for being that program.
Right.
That is just constantly sort of like good because they just sort of decide like, yes, we know how to be good.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, there's obviously a level in women's college basketball that is sort of above everybody, you know, but like Indiana has put itself in that. It's, I wouldn't say next tier down, but it has reached the point that like it has every right to stand with anybody else in the Big Ten. You know, I mean, like, you know, UConn's at a different level. South Carolina's at a different level right now. I mean, there's a handful of other programs that you'd put in that same, you know, stratosphere, like Stanford or somebody like that. But, you know, and like Iowa happens to have, you know, at the moment, either the best or second best player in the country. But other than that, you know, like they are part of that, like basically like everybody else that sort of has a non, you know, top of the world program they can hang with, basically. And it took a lot of work to get to that point. I mean, just even a small thing here. I mean, like, you know, I'm not sure how many Hoosier stairs I've gone to since I've been back in Indiana. But back in the old days, man, I mean, it was like, you know, like it was really, Indiana women's basketball was just there when it came to Hoosier Stereo. It was like, okay, like you could clearly tell that they had a sense that like, okay, we are second banana here. You know, like we are here to just sort of try to catch whatever, you know, wave we can just from being on the same court as the men. And now the women have won at a higher level. I mean, like the men have all this hype around them, but the women have really been there. You know, and right, so like yeah. There was just a sense that they did not feel like they weren't on an equal playing field. I mean, hell, like on, you know, when it came to, you know, 3 points when they were teaming up, almost every team had a men's player and women's player. Women's player like made more threes on almost every single like thing. I mean, even Miller Kopp had a really good showing, and I think Chloe McNeil was right behind him, and everybody else like was outdone by their women's counterpart. Like, and I mean, it's a fearless crew now. Like it is like they absolutely felt like they had every right to be out on that court with them.
Yeah. Fearless is a good word. They don't care. They just, you know,
yeah,
this is what we do. Their attitude is just sort of, this is what we do now.
Right.
And if you stop and think about it, they, you know, obviously the last couple years have been really, really good, but performing at that NCAA tournament level, that just sort of, you know, as in any sport,
yeah,
you consistently get there.
Yeah.
You're going to start getting better at recruiting, attracting talent, and then the ceiling raises again. So,
right. And they beat pros now. Like, they, you know, there are players that they've beat that are, you know, out making money doing it now.
We'll leave it there. It's still 7-1 San Diego, which is an awful shame. he's Dustin DePerek. I'm Zach Osterman. We will be back Sunday night, if you hear this before Sunday, talking about IU Michigan and whatever happens in that game between now and then for the Indianapolis Star and the Bloomington Herald Times. Again, he's Dustin. I'm Zach. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.